We will go ahead and call the meeting to order this morning then. Thanks everyone for coming in and see you or meet you, Lisa. If everyone just say their name, go around the board so she has it on record. I'll start out, I'm Jerry Kolke.
Lisa Nelski.
Kevin Tyler, Parks and Lands Division.
Danielle Cowley, Vegetation.
Jeff Duval, Vegetation Management Field Inspector.
Bill Zimmerman.
Randy Laufer, District 5.
Lee Wells, District 1.
I'm Chris. Can you hear us okay, Justin, on the phone?
I can.
Okay. That's Justin on the phone.
All right.
Thanks, everybody.
Justin on the phone.
So, first order of business is to approve the minutes from the previous meeting, which was on audio. So you have those with you?
I didn't get an email of them. Do they email those out? You know, last time we went through this too.
Yeah, Justin should have sent an email. I'll check with him when he comes back.
I haven't got one.
And I also posted on the website, so it's underneath the county weed board website. I always keep things like this on there for all of you guys to look at, or anybody else for that matter.
Anyway.
Just as a secondary backup.
Randy, what email address are we using for you?
rlaufer@hotmail.com.
Yeah, we have the correct email.
Okay.
I get emails from.
Yeah, okay. Well, so typically what I do is when I type up the minutes, then I send them to Kevin and Justin to approve, and then assuming Justin sends them out for all of you. So we could change our process a little bit, and I could just do that myself. So make sure everybody gets them.
But there's a copy with the red thing right there in your Kate's minutes.
Yeah.
Kate?
I think if you want to take a minute to kind of look at those and see if it rings a bell.
Well, I'll move that we accept as presented.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to adopt the minutes as presented. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same. Thank you. Oops, get that out of the way. Item 2, update on House Bill 1355. And Justin?
Kevin. Yeah, I'll
Kevin?
Take care of that.
Yep. All right.
So I don't know how closely you followed any of this, but the state legislature passed that recent House bill to update RCW 1710. There were sort of two focal points, I think, for the bill. One was a little bit of cleanup about how the state and the county weed boards are appointed and how membership works. And the other one was about assessments for state-owned lands. You know, transportation right-of-ways and property owned by state agencies. So I guess I just made some quick notes of kind of the highlights. In addition to the updating the weed board appointment procedures, one big change that we saw is that county weed boards can now be made up of three instead of four members in the primary production of agriculture. So prior to now, we always had to have four, and now we can have three. So it gives us a little bit more flexibility in these urbanizing counties to have districts that, like, especially in the south part of the county, it's hard to find people that are in the primary production of agriculture. So I think that'll help us in going forward. There were some updates to the requirements on forest lands. So if you own forest, the requirements are a little bit stronger, a little more clearly worded. It requires eradication of all Class A noxious weeds, controlling the spread of Class B noxious weeds, and then for those Class C and Class B that are locally designated by our weed board, forest land owners have to control it within, I believe it's 1,000 feet of their perimeter, of their property line. So if they have, say, something like Canada thistle, which we locally designate for certain things, and it's inside a perimeter of 1,000 feet, you don't necessarily have to control it. You're preventing it from spreading to another property owner by having that 1,000-foot buffer, essentially. See what else? State agencies are now supposed to appoint a liaison for working with county weed boards. So each state agency should have their own person assigned for coordinating with us locally. And we don't know how that's going to work yet. With WashDOT, we tend to work with one individual statewide, Ray Willard. But, you know, other agencies is kind of hit and miss. So see how that plays out over time.
Kevin, I got a question.
Yeah.
In the past, we've had the state agencies here at the board meetings, haven't we? Weed control? I thought we did.
On occasion, maybe.
I thought we had somebody talking about the right of way and that. When Kara was here and 4 or 5 years ago.
No, I think you're right. I think we did have.
Was it about the Rush skeleton weed?
It might have been.
Yeah. I'm just throwing that out, but I remember in the past.
It'd be nice to have them, quite frankly.
Yeah.
Because they.
We would have somebody else to pick on.
Yeah. Well, maybe when we have a list of who our contacts are going to be, we can just give them. You know, at the beginning of the year, these are going to be board meetings are going to be, and please join.
And the last thing was that the state law establishes a system for state agencies to pay assessments. So this is the noxious weed assessment.
Oh.
And so right-of-ways and like, you know, state forest lands within the county, if the way that I'm reading it is if there is a noxious weed assessment in that county, which we don't have one, then there will be a method for assessing those state-owned lands. There's another effort at play, and we have a survey to talk about here in a little bit, where they're looking at sort of a statewide assessment for right-of-way and how that might be applied. So we don't know yet if that's going to be just something that will be applied across all counties, and whether you have an assessment or not, you'll be available to tap into that funding. That's kind of still to be determined.
Is that state and county?
It would just be state.
Just state.
I mean, the county here, at least, the county pays this group to do noxious weed control on county right-of-ways. So they don't necessarily give us funding, but they pay for
the project. And in the result, they expect you to take care of that too.
Yeah, they pay for a portion of Jeff's salary and Danielle's salary. Anybody who works on the right-of-way doing weed control. So that's RCW 1710. If you guys have any questions, let me know. And as we learn more, we'll make sure you guys are informed.
1710 or 1355?
1355 was the number of the Senate bill.
Oh, okay. House bill.
Yeah, sorry, House bill that updated the RCW.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. And yeah. The RCW was 1710.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, got it. Wondered why you had different numbers. Okay.
All right, that's it on that one.
Okay.
So Tansy Ragwort, Jeff, can you give a quick update on that?
Yeah, so on the Tansy Ragwort, our update as it sits now is, for one, we're really low on manpower. We haven't been able to get large mountain correctional teams. We have a contract out. I guess it's probably been signed. It's sitting. You know, they could be locked down again. One thing we've tried to do is use the county corrections crews, and that's kind of been hit and miss. We're considered a special project, so they only have Saturday and Sundays. I've been running a point on trying to wrangle their crew chief and the crews and get them on hot spots that we are finding on county roads, and haven't really gotten a lot of intel back from them. I have some of their numbers that they have pulled, so that's been kind of a little bit of a weak point. We're getting quite a few complaints of county roads. Now let's look at, you know, Dan and John weren't able to do any spray work all of last year. They were able to do some pull work in 45 days, but it wasn't substantial, and in the spray work wasn't substantial. So we're on that hump, we're on that bell curve now of vast amounts. We received a very large complaint as of Thursday of yesterday, so me and two of our temps went out and worked all around the battleground area, closed off 90% of those complaints, except for we have a really big infestation on railroad right-of-way, so we're gonna have it shut down on Wednesday so we can get in there and get that done, and now that'll clean up that whole battleground complaint. For my fuel inspector program, I have been working zone 2-3 a lot in areas before I start writing people to warning or violation, because I am never gonna have anybody go, what about that? But for the numbers, we're not doing really well. So we've been on Tansy patrol for 24 days and only pulled 1,840 pounds. Two years ago, we were at 21 days, we were at 9,600. So it kind of shows the ratio when we don't have the large mountain crews. They are indispensable for doing Tansy roundup. And that's pretty much what I got there for those numbers. If you have any more questions, feel free to ask me.
I'm going to add to that. So the county right-of-way program has treated over 800 lineal miles of county roads. The only hang-up is the flowering tansy plants that were sprayed didn't, over a month ago, did not accept the herbicide. Because of, I think, everything pushed forward about a month with the temperatures for seed production. So that's why we're having the complaints. Even though all the county roads have been sprayed 6 feet off of the center of road or the side of the road, there's been some complaints here and there. I don't feel like it's as bad as it was last year. I've noticed, I've done some spot checks with the spray truck. We're definitely getting all the thistles that we can reach. We're seeing some good curling there. If it's pre-flower, if it's flower, you know, you kind of have that, you know, is it gonna accept the herbicide? Is the seed gonna still be viable? And then one of the staff on the FIP side grabbed a couple plants that we know that it had been roadside treated a month ago, and we actually threw it in some soil to see if we can get them to germinate. So just to kind of see, like, okay, so if we're spraying, you know, have they hardened off already, or have they not hardened off already? And, you know, what is that survivability with the herbicide treatment? Was it successful or not? So there's more to come there long term down the road. So, but we actually have treated almost all of our requirement for all of the county main roads. The last area they're finishing is the Hawkinson area, the Brush Prairie Hawkinson area. So everything else has been done. Ridgefield's been done, Washougal was done first, Ridgefield was second, you know, all the nines and twos, which is like 72nd, all the main drags, 179, 199, those were all done. So we're really in that top upper right corner quadrant area that they've got to finish up. And I quite frankly think they'll be done in the next week or two. And then we'll transition to doing blackberry control for site visibility issues. But we're going to kind of play that with waiting until people pick berries, right? Like, we always have to kind of watch that, because that is a complaint from everyone. And so they're going to probably transition into guardrail spraying again, because we missed it all last season, and catch that up so it actually looks good, and then transition when, you know, berries have fallen off and people are done picking, so we're not getting ourselves in trouble that way. So just so you guys have a different update from us in terms of the county road system. So
Well, as far as the herbicide not being effective, is of course one thing is as dry as it has been, it's even all of them, you know, you want them lush and growing to, you know, to get much effectiveness. So yeah. So I have a couple of questions. Is has Victor Bloomquist been in touch with you this year?
I don't think so.
Wow.
Really?
Justin Which has one? Not mentioned.
Huh? So.
Which one?
Victor Bloomquist.
Oh, Victor.
Victor.
You said Mr.
Yeah, no. Victor Bloomquist.
Obviously, we kept him happy this year.
Well, so and you haven't hit Hawkinson yet, where he is.
Yeah,
and I'm going, my gosh, you know, last year I was on the phone with him for an hour and a half.
I've hit the roads. I've pulled the roads, but we haven't done the spray on
well,
it.
Well, he's always upset about his next door neighbor.
His next door neighbor's fine.
Yeah, and so the other question I have, are you seeing much of any cinnabar moths coming down? Really?
I've not seen very many on county land. And see, the number that Jeff has is also county lands, tansy as well, that we've cut and backed. Mm-hmm. It's not just communally just roads, just specifically roads. No, I've not seen the cinnabar. And I feel like the cinnabar larva kind of is cyclical as well. So, you know, they kind of die off, and then later on when we have this nice, you know, not as much of a flush, they all of a sudden show up again. And then we have them and they taper back off. Yeah. It continues to do that kind of where it rotates up and down and up and down.
Well, we knew that, but gee, you know, we thought we were starting to see some cinnabar moths coming back last year and everything. And gosh, I was really hoping to see more. Yeah.
As in the calipellers, I see a lot. I'm usually having to kick the plants and get them to knock off before I put them in my truck.
Where's that at?
But are you saying that everything? That's what he's asking.
Yeah, I'm seeing a lot, and I'm seeing a lot of damage. I had a place on the railroad by Battle Ground Lake on Friday where I had two big infestations. So a big infestation that would say be 6 feet across. That 6 feet across was all eaten. Here they had. And then when I walked over there, well, they're gone. So either they're crawling back down, they're doing stuff. So they're around, and you know, we can go to my truck right now. They're crawling all over the back of my truck because sometimes they just don't come up. So they're there, and I get that question asked a lot from landowners. And when you're in the trenches, you see a lot of it. But for the adults, I've only seen two adults so far this summer.
Yeah, I haven't seen any adults at all. Yeah.
Same thing up at my place. I haven't seen any adult moths flying around, and I've seen one bush with the larva on it. Mm-hmm. But I've seen less tansy this year, but the ones I am seeing are really lush.
Yeah.
Boy, are they nice.
Or they're short because they've been mowed and they're flowering.
I've found
that. And that's happened too, where we have, they obviously are trying to produce seed no matter what, and if they get mowed, they're gonna shoot back up again and flower.
The ones I've pushed over or where it mowed it off, where I mow around the edge of the fields, some of that, I had to go back and nip them off. But if I get back in the pockets of the timber, sunlight, a little moisture, stays cooler, boy, are they healthy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But.
Let's see. So, weed-free gravel mulch inspection status update. We're not doing it.
Yeah, it's the same message as earlier in the year. You know, we've still got that vacancy in our field inspection program. We're still working on filling the vacancy. Things just take a lot of time. County government these days. And so we put our weed-free inspection services on hold. We put our work on looking at gravel inspections on hold. We hope to be able to provide those services next year, at least get back to the weed-free forage services next year. We refer people to the state. I know that's not a great, option. It's not a popular decision. We're having a tough time just keeping up on noxious weed control. So we still have twine available here at the office, so if someone does go through the process, then we can at least provide that at a local source.
Did Kevin Dobbins get some satisfaction out of things? It sounded like he ended up, the state guys came down and inspected, and he was pretty happy with that. They were on the way down and did it, and so I assume that he got worked out. Did he? Good. Okay.
Yeah, from what we understand, the state will package up and do several inspections at one time, so it reduces the overall cost.
Yeah, that was...
You don't get billed for the entire trip down,
right,
the entire trip back.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Let's see. Noxious weed designation survey. Does anybody
That's
have
me.
Anything about that?
So, I mean, I'm just pulling up what was sent over from Mary Fee, but they're asking for a survey to be completed for the 2022 noxious weed species that they're trying to get information about listed as Class Bs. So the species that they are asking about, which I don't believe we have some of these, hanging sedge, Carpensis penula, which we may have some in wetlands. I mean, we'd have to go do some digging because that's a grass species. It's always fun to identify. Rough sherbal, which we tend to have wild sherbal or burr sherbal, but this is a different one than we have that I'm aware of. The other one is wild basil, which I've never heard that one before. It has a little, I can pass this around. And then the last one, which we have a lot of, is common tansy. And it has, they want to move it from a Class C to a Class B is their recommendation, or their ask, I guess. I will pass this around so you can see the plants. There's kind of terrible pictures, but sorry.
How does common tansy differentiate from tansy ragwort?
It has a different flower. The leaf structure is a lot different. It's a lot at Vancouver Lake, like down okay. off of Frenchman's Bar area. You'll see it. It sneaks around quite a bit, but it has like individual flower heads that are circular in nature with no like petioles off okay. of them. They look like little buttons, if you will, but like a top that has multiple buttons and they're just yellow. We get complaints. People think that they tend to be tansy, right? That uh-huh. St. John's wort. They get confused between mm-hmm. that one, St. John's wort, and tansy. So it is throughout the county. I would say distribution is pretty widespread in the county.
Is it toxic to livestock?
I don't know if it is. Lee, you got your thing. It just disappeared
Sorry,
behind you.
I threw it at you.
Yeah. I don't know if it is toxic.
Sorry.
I think more than anything, it tends to kind of create dense clumps and then spreads by, like, I want to say patches, if you will. It doesn't necessarily become a complete monoculture. I always kind of see it in a conditional, like, just a big patch, and that tends to move around.
Well, we could classify a lot of things that way. Red rut pigweed and lamb's quarter and, I mean, what the heck?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the problem is, I mean, I think once again, this is obviously your guys' decision, but quite frankly, that's another one that I don't know if we're even hitting the services currently to add one more on. I don't know yeah. if that would be, I mean, we could do it, but I just don't know if that's probably the best method. If it was my recommendation, we wouldn't move it just because it's all over.
So it's not up to the county, or it's not up to the state to designate it a Class B. It's up to the county.
They're
if we want to.
They're asking for your feedback. The state weed board is asking for our county's feedback on these species within Clark County. Usually those surveys come in and they say, tell us how many acres is currently infested with X species. And then Justin would plunk in the number of, okay, well, my guess is, okay, it's 50 acres per X for Clark County. You know, it's like 5% or 10% or whatever. And so this survey is a little different because it doesn't actually ask you that. It says designated or not designated. It's or then an unknown, you know, fill out more information scenario. So, that's, I think, what he probably wanted to bring to the table, just to, because that's a state ask as of, you know, before September 1st or September, whatever it is. So, yeah.
So that's part of the state weed board's process of updating the noxious weed list. So currently, common tansy is a Class C. Depending on the information that they get back from counties, they could take a couple of steps. They could designate it statewide as a Class B, so then every county would be required for control. Or they can pick specific counties. They can pick just, you know, if it's a problem in certain counties, they can designate those, or, you know, that's kind of the flexibility. If they don't designate it as a B at the county level, we can designate it for control, even if it's still a Class C. Right. We did that here several years ago when Casey Gozart was the weed coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
We designated it for 1 year because we were starting to see it, and the more we looked, the more we found, and I think Casey's decision at the time was not to ask for it to be designated again because we couldn't keep up with everything, let alone adding another Class B that...
Mm-hmm.
Statewide, if it's designated as a Class B, there's no additional resources to help manage it.
Okay. Right.
Right.
That's nice.
Yeah. Yeah. They will give resources for certain Class Bs. One of them is like Japanese knotweed. There's a grant program for that. Otherwise, it's resources from the state are at the Class A level.
Okay. Like garlic mustard.
And very limited popcorn. Funding.
Yeah.
Like $2,500 or less, kind of a
scenario.
Yeah.
It's a nice drop in the bucket.
Just keeps us in bags.
Yeah. There's another survey that Justin wanted to bring to your attention, which is related to that noxious weed assessment I mentioned. So I'll read you the survey questions and see if you have any thoughts, because they are asking about County Weed Board's position on things. So the first question is, if our county has a program that's funded by a noxious weed assessment and we don't, so that's easy for us to answer that question. And then the next one is, if we believe that our county noxious weed board would support a statewide Department of Transportation right-of-way noxious weed assessment. Rather than trying to figure out if I believe you will support that or not, I just thought we should ask you. So if that's something that you have a thought about. And then, do you believe that our county will collect noxious weed assessments on right-of-ways pursuant to Senate Bill 1355? I don't know yet. This hasn't come to council's attention. And then, if you answered yes to the previous question, do you believe that your county assessor and treasurer have the resources to address the assessment for right-of-ways? And I think the answer to that question is yes. And then if we answered no, do you believe that your county noxious weed board program has the resources to address the noxious weed assessment for right-of-ways? For example, collecting road mile data and submitting the appropriate billing to the county departments. I think that is yes, because it's all available in GIS.
Okay.
So really the question for you all is, if you support a statewide Department of Transportation right-of-way noxious weed assessment.
It's up for debate.
Or you can choose not to answer.
So who would collect it?
Yeah.
The assessor's office would collect it and then provide that funding through the general fund to this program.
So does it go into the general fund or will it go into the weed control?
Well, the weed control program is funded through the general fund, so it would go into the general fund and then be allocated to this program.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So the allocation would go up, or?
Yeah.
You're hoping.
Theoretically. But could that could also mean that we then have responsibility for more work along state right-of-ways.
I was also gonna ask, like, would it increase county workload when would it be doing something in additional that's already been, is it redoing something that's already being done and creating?
Currently, the way that we work with the state is we survey and provide them with information about where their noxious weeds are located, and then it's their responsibility to control. There's a lot of hand-holding, a lot of coordination effort with that, because the state doesn't have the expertise to identify noxious weeds. So we can provide them with a map that shows dots on the map and says your weeds are here, but they go out and they can't always identify those weeds on the ground. So there's a lot of coordination effort. I see Jeff looking down his glasses at me like. But so we've been talking with the state a lot recently about billing for our services as we provide them assistance, because we have to balance that with how much assistance would we provide for a private landowner. We can't do more than we would do for anybody else in the county. And so one of these, you know, this discussion has helped fuel the larger statewide discussion, because we're not the only county that's asking for the state to do what every other landowner is being asked to do, which is control your noxious weeds. And, you know, we fined them last year, issued a citation. And I don't know if Justin's planning on that this year, but. So the answer to the question is, I'm not sure yet exactly how it would play out. The state would still be required to control their noxious weeds, but the funding would be used to help offset our costs in that, providing that coordination of surveying, identifying noxious weed populations on state right-of-ways and notifying them, you know, all of that. So it's the county's cost of doing business. It would help offset that, is my guess.
Yeah. That sounds positive.
Yeah.
The only question I have or comment I have is, I may support the assessment, but to turn around and on your back go into the county general fund, it should be earmarked specifically for the weed control. Go to the weed control board, weed control portion of the general fund, not just the general fund, because the county general fund has got a big hole in it, and they have a tendency to, I'm going to say, cannibalize some of the other entities in the county, and they go hurting. So
yeah.
I guess that's where my heartfelt feeling is, that it needs, if it's an assessment, it needs to go strictly to the weed boards for management, or I said my piece.
Well, I would say don't even bother. Longwood Lee is, yeah, that if it's going to go to the general fund, we'll probably never see it again. This is my first thing. But the other thing is, it's you're talking about a lot of work to try and put this all together for how much, you know, return. And they're expected to do it anyhow. So, you know, is it just redundant, you know? Yeah.
So now Kevin's got his marching orders. Yeah. Nobody knows what they are yet. But
he didn't get an answer, but he got verbiage.
Got some feedback.
If you actually felt like there was going to be a benefit to helping control weeds, then yes. But like if it is something that's already being done and it's not really going to improve what's already being done, then you know, it could just be somebody somewhere saying, well, we've got to do something, so let's, you know, do more, you know, not really do anything more. So yeah, if there's an overall benefit, then yeah. But
thank you.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so it looks like he's got a number funny on Justin's agenda.
Yeah, he does.
Does your next one say 11? I crossed him out. Anyway, Danielle has an update for this.
For Yellowhead?
I should have printed photos. I have them back at the office. Lame. I found a new plant species for our county. It's on the monitor list. It's called Inula, or Yellowhead Inula. It was across from Raspberry Park in Phillida on the county right-of-way. I've reached out to a number of different agencies to try to get some understanding of it. It actually has kind of an interesting, it produces vegetatively through roots and seeds, but mostly roots. So the roots kind of are the problem child there. And it gets about 3-4 foot tall. I mean, it gets pretty large. And we had about, well, we had 20 flowering plants when I first, flowers, when I first saw it. We since went back last week, we had 190 flowers. And there were only 20 plants.
Jeez.
So I've done a bunch of research for various entities trying to figure out what to do about it. It's on the monitor list. It's not required for control. It's mostly in the East Coast of the U.S. Like New York has it pretty bad, Minnesota, Michigan, those areas up there. It has been seen in Oregon near Mary's Peak. They said a few in downtown Portland. And then they said California has some populations of it. There's only one other county, it seems like, that has it in the whole state of Washington, which is in Stevenson, which is the furthest northeast of the counties in the state of Washington. And so we did a social media blast on it just to kind of get everybody understanding of what it is. And then we cut all the flowers down and then treated it with Garlon, and we are going to also try Milestone because they say you kind of need a residual to keep it from regenerating a lot. They said glyphosate doesn't do anything, which is fascinating. You know, you would think, well, I would kill it too. No, it doesn't. So we tried to stick with what we could find out scientifically through other agencies of what's worked and what's not worked. There's not a lot of known information about it, really, which is interesting. It was brought over here as with the colonizers to basically use as medicinal reasons, and then it ended up being more of causing more medical problems than it was worth, unbeknownst to them. So they have since disbanded with that medicinal effort that way. So random spot right away, right near a brand new subdivision that went in, across from Raspberry Fields on the west side of the park. There's a drainage through there that's a wetland drainage that is not really been touched. And it was right there on the right away. I checked an adjacent property owner the best I could from the road, no flowers there. Then I drove in the new development, just kind of confirming that it hadn't snuck out, you know, anywhere else, or maybe it was coming from somebody else's property. Didn't find any there. So we'll just monitor and try to keep our tabs on it. And I mean, the social media hit 500 people over the weekend, which is not great, but not terrible. Facebook or Instagram, actually, quite a few people sent the link. I noticed when you put a lot more detail in there about the weed species and all the habits and everything, it gets forwarded or saved for future, and that actually brings our, we become more of the authority when we share stuff in that world of Instagram, because if it's more saved or sent somewhere, then people are like, oh, they're like the known people that know what this is. So it tends to hit their feeds a little bit better long term. But yeah, so new species we're watching. Yeah.
Is there any danger with Milestone in the drainage way?
It's not actually, it's along the right of way. So it wouldn't leach in the drainage at all.
Okay.
No. But that's a good question.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of the adjuvants we use are the modified seed oils that adhere that, and it has a weird fuzzy leaf, so you really do have to kind of watch the adjuvant itself. It's a lot like a common mullein leaf where it's got a lot of hair to it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's some products we can use in that way that are adjuvants to kind of stick things specifically. So yeah.
Did it happen to look like it was a yard debris dump?
No, it didn't.
Yeah, it didn't look like it.
It was like literally underneath a hazelnut tree and then just grass. And I thought, well, maybe the county mower swung it, you know, swung something by and then grabbed it from somebody else's house and swung it down, and nothing on that road. So yeah, I don't know. It could have come in from somebody's property as a, or you know, plant they planted.
The new construction hay that they use for
erosion control. Wasn't over there.
But from the year prior.
No, there was nothing over there. Yeah. That's what's so weird is we've been treating, what's it called?
The park?
Oh, Lesser Celadine in the park there, and that's one of my hot spots to check, and I always have to hit that around April or February or early March because that species flowers a lot, and I always park there, and so I always look at that drainage just intentionally to see if it's snuck over there, and I've never seen this before. So I mean, this is new for us. Anyway, so just thought that bring to your attention.
Terrific. Great. Okay. Thank you.
Kevin, do you want to
aquatics?
These aquatic updates.
Yeah. So I got three. We received a grant agreement from the state last week for Japanese knotweed control efforts, in the amount of $25,000. So that has to go to council for approval. And our focus will be on Gibbons Creek. We've never done Gibbons Creek. And if I believe Justin's plan was if we're able to survey and treat everything in Gibbons Creek, then we would look at other tributary, other Washougal area streams. And coordinating with Skamania County and the wildlife refuge. They're doing a bunch of work on the wildlife refuge, as you know. And then next one was Vancouver Lake. If you remember, we had a grant from the state. There's been a lot of work with the Friends of Vancouver Lake to treat milfoil. And we completed a survey recently with the help of Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife. And so we're currently in the process of compiling data collected through that survey effort, and then Friends of Vancouver Lake had some survey efforts as well. And looking at any remaining milfoil that's out there on the lake, on Lake River or the Flushing Channel. And then also concern that the Friends of Vancouver Lake has is the population of curly leaf pondweed appears to be increasing now that the milfoil competition is gone, and what we do about that, if we do anything at this time. So that's Vancouver Lake. And then we have a request into council to apply for a grant for variable leaf milfoil out on Warren Seeley Reservoir. Something that a private landowner brought to our attention, and it just happens to be a Class A noxious weed. And so the Department of Ecology recommended that we apply for this grant. It's called the Early Infestation Grant. And if awarded, we would have about $50,000 to spend on treating that species in Warren Seeley Lake, Warren Seeley Reservoir, and then also doing survey up and downstream to make sure that that's the only population. Assuming we get the grant. That's it on the aquatic side of things.
On Vancouver Lake there, I know was it last year they treated, or was it?
Yes.
Yeah. How effective, or I guess maybe you're just in the middle of that survey, so you don't know, but did we pretty well knock it out, or
yes.
Is there some coming back? I assume
it's not there.
was not there at all.
Yeah.
Wow.
So it was,
I mean, for us in agriculture is, gosh, if we get, you know, 95% or 98%, you know, we're going, woo, you know.
Yep.
And
it's higher than that.
Yeah, really.
Near,
at least
near
when I did the boat survey, it was, I didn't see any.
Yeah.
It's only curly.
So they treated last year in the spring, late spring.
Yep.
And then we did survey efforts in July.
Yeah.
We didn't see any milfoil.
Really?
This year, they did it again, no milfoil. I wasn't out on the boat this time, but that's what I've heard anecdotally. Although there appears to be some milfoil in the flushing channel, which could be, you know, I don't think we treated the flushing channel. And so it could have already been there, or it could be coming in from the Columbia. But yeah, this new herbicide that was used on the lake, Procellacor, you know, I compare it to like Milestone for hay fields, right? You know, it's like the miracle worker. So it treated all of the milfoil, but you know, there's other vegetation that's out there, curly-leaf pondweed, and then we saw other pondweeds as well, right? Like sago pondweed, which is native, and so yet to be seen what next steps really look like.
When you apply that stuff, how do you apply it? Do you just inject it into the water, or do you spray?
No, they can use sprayers. Sometimes they're granular, like a granular spreader. Sometimes they're sprayers. I wasn't present for the application, but that product actually has to, you have to have your aquatics, and then you have to also have a secondary training through CPRO, the maker of Procellacor, for their products specifically. And you cannot apply it, even though you know, aquatic herbicide applications are required to just be aquatic applicators. This adds another level in there. So they kind of have a specialty set of people that can do that product.
I wasn't there either. The contractor was hired by the Friends of Vancouver Lake. But the videos I've seen about Procellacor, it's sprayed out of the back of the boat as they drive through the lake.
Yeah.
So able to get pretty good coverage, and it's not like some of the other herbicides where you have to apply it where it's not necessarily a contact herbicide, so you don't have to apply it right where the weed is in the lake and hope that it you can just kind of evenly spread it across the lake and then.
So the flushing channel, does it flush back into Vancouver Lake?
Yeah, it goes both directions.
That's the danger right there.
Yeah, when the tide comes up, tide goes down, that kind of thing, and then the, you know, freshets in the late spring.
And didn't the Army Corps do some work on it prior to the Silicor application?
The port did some work to...
The port.
Yeah, there's some gates out there. Mm-hmm. Something about one of them wasn't functioning properly or opened all the way. I don't remember all the details, but they did some work to make sure that the flushing channel was working as designed. Some upkeep and maintenance.
Isn't the tidal influence mainly this time of the year?
I think the tidal influence is all year round. But this earlier in the year, like around June, we normally see the heavy snow melt. And so you'll see a rise in the Columbia River elevation, Vancouver Lake, all of that area. But other than that, the tidal influence is basically, it's daily. It's just like any other, the tidal influence goes all the way up to Bonneville Dam, is my understanding. And the further you get away from the, you know, the less of the influence it is, but it does, it fluctuates up and down all throughout the year.
But even with that, isn't Bonneville Dam influences it some too by their releases?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And yeah.
Yeah. Because I know we had a good friend that had a house right up there on Skamania Landing, and he noticed that, geez, it was always up and down, and he goes, man, he said, tidal influence can't be that much. So he got on with Bonneville Power and, you know, could look at their releases, and it was like, wow, one day there's hardly anything, and the next day they're just dumping and stuff. So, okay.
Which is why they had to apply the herbicide before they released a bunch of water from the dam. You know, that was also part of the consideration for the Priscilla Corps applications. I had to watch the water release from the dam down. That was my understanding.
Okay. Be interesting to see, you know, okay, you're calling it Priscilla Corps. You know, in agriculture, we have all these different herbicides. And for cabbage, it's called one thing. And for, you know, for soybeans, it's called something else. But it's the same herbicide, you know. So I wonder if it'd be...
No, this is actually a brand new chemistry.
Okay, it'd be
so
interesting to see.
I don't think it's actually in your world, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
More for aquatic. It might be for diking districts at some point. But I think it's kind of brand new and... underneath only one business right now.
So I will say this is the in the horticulture conference that we attend, they were saying one time that virtually all herbicides stem from corn and soybeans. That at some point or other, that's the big guns. And so, you know, they take those and modify them or morph them to fit, you know, the other crops, the specialty crops that we do get. Yeah. So,
interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Any other items from the board? You guys got more?
I'm not on the board, but we had a community member ask why arum
italicum
is not on the weed list. And so Justin said we'll have to ask the weed board. And I think he sent an email, but I don't know if anybody got it or not. And I don't think it's on the state list at all.
I got it.
You did?
Okay. Yeah.
That's the one you did.
So what is it? I mean, you use the Latin name, but what?
Arum is the name.
Yeah,
it's not the Latin name.
Well, that's not the Latin name.
No, it's the name. It's an arrow-shaped leaf that has veination to it, and then it has the seed head is the flower, if you will, has it. It turns like lime green, and then yellow, and then red, or vice versa as it matures. We have it all throughout the county. There's really no, I think the reason it's not in the state like required for control is no one knows how to kill it. Everybody's tried different herbicides. They've tried tarping, they've tried all the things, and nothing has worked. And so I think because they don't know how to control it, that's why it's probably not been listed, because it is one of those plants that, you know, also settlers brought for their gardens or their properties. And so you'll see it all throughout the county, but it's already flowered. And right now, all you would see is the seed head left. The vegetation usually pops up, I want to say in March and April and May. And then by June, with the heat, it just burns down because it's not really usually around with the heat of the situation. Because it's kind of a thicker leaf too, wouldn't you say? They're kind of a thicker, I want to say it's a little bit like your typical house plants, where it has that thicker, you know, viscous
waxy leaf kind of, or something.
Yeah, and it has a shiny leaf to it, and it has a lot of wax on it, and we've tried different like adjuvants to burn through the wax to get the chemical in, and it just there's nothing. We can't seem to figure. No one's been able to figure it out. All throughout Washington that I know of, we've all tried different things.
And so annual or perennial?
I think it's perennial.
Perennial.
And the caveat too is it's actually sold as an ornamental. Likened to her, the flower. So when skunk cabbage grows, and it flowers, it kind of grows the same way. The flower dies off. But when this one, the flowers die, harden off on it. It looks like a medieval mace, and I liken it to it. It's just like it's on a big stalk, and then they're all round pods that look like some type of hognail or something like that. I get questions about it at least four times a year. So, and then there's people have allergic reactions to the latex that's in it. So,
what was it called again?
Arum, ARUM. I was going to pass this around, and then italicum.
So it's probably not, since it's not on the state list, it's probably not a question for the county board.
Yeah,
it's more a question for the state.
So. Yeah, it's so it's on the state monitor list.
Okay.
So it would need to be designated at the state level.
Yeah.
Which
I'll pass that around.
Either the state's going to come to that conclusion on their own, or there's going to be pressure from counties to list it. We have never sent a petition to the state asking them to list it, and I don't know if other counties have.
So it looks like it has a bulb or a tuber.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, okay.
And that's the tough part.
I got one.
Yeah.
See? Just one.
Yep.
Uh-huh. And below the deck. And the only thing is the
it's
the
coming
pods.
From his house.
Yeah.
The pods are there now, and the pods are starting
it's
to turn
kind of
orange.
A cool looking plant. Yeah.
They were yellow.
Yep.
And they were green, yellow.
Yep.
Now they're
red
orange.
After that, yep.
And everything, my wife accused me of spraying it because the leaves all died.
That's
and
what
and I killed it out. But there's only four pods.
Yep.
That's all there is.
Yep.
And in no place else. But
yeah.
It's
like potato. Once you plant, you always have it.
Yeah.
One of the issues that we've had in some of the natural areas is we've gone in for years to control garlic mustard, and we've done a really, really good job of garlic mustard in this stuff. Too. Hmm.
I wonder if sandia or sedgehammer would work on it, since it is a bulb.
I don't know if you're allowed to use sedgehammers in the areas that it would be, because sometimes it's repairing habitat.
Okay.
See, that's the problem is sedgehammer with that, I think it's engasplam.
My sister used to have this all over her yard, and then she got chickens. It's gone.
Oh,
there we go. Hey, get more chickens.
Got chickens.
Chickens took it out.
Oh.
Yeah, but she's only had the house 2 years, so I'll have to see like long term how. But like it was all over, and I'm like, yeah, that needs to go away. And then she got the chickens, and I haven't seen any of it.
There you go, Lee. Just
chicken.
Just
get some
chickens. Just for
they're pretty. Eggs.
Short
yeah,
pieces.
They're pretty. Yes, yeah. They are pretty. I mean, every plant's pretty. I mean, this one's pretty. I mean, they're all pretty.
Well,
as long as they just behave.
You want me to become a bachelor?
No, I'm not encouraging any of that behavior.
And my wife incarcerated?
Thank you.
Yeah.
You
I have,
bet.
I
Thank
have
you.
One more thing.
We're on tape.
It's good news, bad news with COVID hopefully wrapping up. A lot of volunteer weed removal places have started doing their things. Like my event that I do is going to start up again in September. But bad news is a lot of places, especially like around the city, there's been a lot of homeless encampments, a lot of volunteer. I don't know if this is what's happening to the correctional facilities. Like a lot of the efforts are not doing invasive removal. They're doing trash pickups because there's so much trash. Oh my goodness.
Yes.
So. Is there a lot at Leroy Hagen?
Oh.
Do you do your work?
Trash? No.
Do you have any encampments over that way?
There was one, but they were either really responsible or there's a neighbor who goes like through the park
and cleans
twice a day and picks up stuff with his dog.
Oh.
Hmm. But other areas of the city, the watersheds. Golly, they just changed the name. It was the Vancouver Watershed Alliance. They've switched over pretty much just to plantings and trash pickups, and then Solve is like almost all trash pickups, and
Okay, no other items from the board? I'll go ahead and adjourn the meeting. Thank you very much.
Next one is what? September 13th, huh?
For appeals.